the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, the aftermath of the controversy. Well, let's just call it the scandal and fall of former Senator John Edwards is now in the period of some back talk. That's what happens when anything like this goes on in the media. When something like this happens, there's an immediate wave of conversation. And then there's a back conversation that starts. There is always this analysis that begins. Well, what did this mean? Did we overreact? Today, I want to be talking about an article that was published by Psychology Today in response to the scandal and the confession of former Senator John Edwards. He committed adultery. There is the argument that Americans just need to get over being concerned about this. Now, that kind of back talk is absolutely to be expected these days. But what's interesting is when you put that into the political context right now, I think that's what's really interesting. Because if you listen to people talk, whether they are Republicans or Democrats, liberals or conservatives, here is the near unanimous consensus that if John Edwards had won the Democratic nomination, and if right now he was preparing to face John McCain in the fall, this would be disastrous for his electoral hopes. Now, I think that's true. In other words, I think that that scenario is exactly where the consensus appears to believe that it is. If John Edwards were the Democratic nominee, presumptive at this point, the Democratic Party would be in big trouble. But along come these articles suggesting that the problem is not John Edwards, the problem is the American public. And in particular, there is an article by Roy Baumeister published at Psychology Today in which he categorically rejects the idea that a sex scandal should be considered politically significant at all. He writes, "My thesis is that the American people and their chances for good government are the ones most harmed by these scandals. In fact, I recommend that we should stop considering sexual behavior as a qualification for political office," end quote. Now, the reason why I think we need to discuss this is not because I believe that most Americans would agree with Mr. Baumeister. As a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure most Americans do not. But I am concerned that even as the vast majority of Americans appear to believe that sexual morality should be considered within this context, I think they're hard-pressed to give an answer why. That's what this back talk now in the aftermath of the Edwards controversy is showing. There are a lot of Americans who seem to have the right instinct, but they fail to come up with a coherent argument. I want us to think about that. Do you believe that committing adultery, being involved in a sex scandal like this, should be a disqualification for public office? Or let's just take Mr. Baumeister on in terms of his statement that it should have no meaning at all. Do you agree with that? Or do you believe that what a man does, or for that matter, what a woman does, in terms of the sexual life, is an indicator of character and performance and other issues? I'm going to talk about why I think it's even bigger than that when you think about the meaning of something like this. I want to invite your conversation. Give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. You know, the arguments are coming saying we should just get over this. We should just grow up and get over our Victorian concern with sexual morality. That's the way some of this is being phrased. And just get on with being concerned with mere competence. One of the things I want to talk about is the fact that I don't believe there is any such thing as mere competence. We're not electing a robot. We're electing a human being. With all of that human being's weaknesses and with all of those human beings' failures, we're going to be talking about that on the Albert Mohler Program today. The phone number 877-893-8255. And those who call in today will be receiving, the first two callers to be on the air, be receiving a free copy of my book, Atheism Remix, just released by Crossway Books, in which I take on and confront the new atheists in this new book, Atheism Remix, out. We'll look forward to your calls in just a moment. First, to review some issues in the news. Once again, the news is being led by the conflict between Russia and Georgia, and outside Gori in Georgia, The news is coming that even after Russia agreed to stop its offensive and to accept what amounted to a ceasefire, Russian forces have taken this frontline Georgian city. They've seized munitions at military bases and set up positions along the country's main east-west highway. President Bush said that Russia must keep its word and act to end this crisis. And he also announced that U.S. military planes and ships will begin ferrying humanitarian aid to the beleaguered country of Georgia. This is really escalating into something that I think most people did not believe was possible at this time. I think most people believed that we had reached a point, certainly in terms of European history, where open conflict like this was a thing of the past, a 20th century reality, a World War I, World War II reality, a Franco-Prussian War reality, but not a 2008 reality. I think, if nothing else, this is a reminder to us that peace, in terms of even the absence of military hostilities, we'll just define it that merely, that even that kind of peace is actually a very fragile thing that is very easily broken. And what we're looking at here is the true nature of the Russian government coming to the fore here. It is the Russian government that is making very clear that it is intending to assert its leadership in the region, even when that means sending in military forces. And let's look at the brutality of this. This is something that, at least to my mind, has become very much more clear over the last 24 hours. The brutality and forcefulness and ruthlessness of this Russian military incursion is very similar to what we have seen in wars in the past, not mere disagreements between two sovereign nations. We'll be watching this with you, but it is a reminder to us of the stakes in any international conflict. We can sit here in the United States and say that's a long way away, but in reality, this is all tied to the peace of the world. Right now, this has immediate ramifications for the other nations that were formerly a part of the Soviet Union. If you are Latvia, Estonia, Belarus, if you are Ukraine, you have to be worried about what kind of signal Russia is sending here and whether Russia will be opportunistic in using whatever pretense or cause it can claim to take military action to assert its leadership in those other regions as well. Let's remember that some of those nations just mentioned are not only formerly a part of the Soviet Union, they are presently a part of the European Union, and some of them are member states of NATO. Now that should have your attention, because NATO has what's often referred to as the Three Musketeers Clause, which is all for one and one for all. If any member state is attacked, every other member state is obligated to come to its defense. So if this were not Georgia at this point, which merely aspires to NATO membership, if this were, for instance, Estonia, then American military forces would right now be required to be in confrontation with Russian military forces. And folks, that's something none of us wants to see. We'll be tracking this with you. Speaking of watching things in the media, here's one of those things that you see and you just have to scratch your head and wonder if people are absolutely serious. The Detroit Free Press and other major media outlets are out with a report suggesting that a new study of at-risk urban families says that stepfathers make slightly better parents than married biological fathers. Now, you know, you look at that in terms of the lead of a news article and you step back and say, are they actually saying that stepfathers are better fathers than biological fathers? Well, let me tell you what's behind this. Again, there's a backstory here, and the backstory itself is very interesting. This report is not actually looking at the definition of fathering the way most of us would consider fathering. The definition of good fathering in this study is a good relationship with the mother and not interfering with the mother's mothering of her children. Well, just think about that. If the criterion here for being a good father is staying out more or less of the of conflict between the mother and the children, well, by definition, a stepfather is almost stereotypically going to score better on that. But that doesn't mean that's what the child needs. I mention this today because when you start looking at reports like this, just remember that social science is intensely ideological. When you see surveys or reports like this, especially given the slipperiness of language and the media's constant temptation to summarize and, in summarizing, misrepresent, you've got to look deeper at this and try to find out what's going on. This study did not find that stepdads were superior to biological dads. It found, and this is pointed out by several observers now, that it found that stepfathers were more, quote, cooperative with mothers than biological fathers. You could just turn that around and say biological fathers are more likely to have a direct investment in their children's lives that some moms could consider uncooperative if mom and dad disagree over an issue of discipline or a choice made for the child. Very, very interesting to look at this. By the way, another statistic that you may hear about adoption is itself revealing. It says that the most common adopter of children in this country is a man. It turns out it's a stepfather marrying a woman with children. That's the reality, at least, of that part of legal adoption in America. We're going to be back to talk about whether sexual morality can be severed from political competence and public leadership. To join the conversation, call 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mueller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. You know, we try to stay away from just talking about what other people are talking about. And for that reason, I made some comments related to the fall of John Edwards. And you say fall here, it's really a public scandal in that sense. He hasn't resigned from any office. He isn't holding any office. He was a candidate for the Democratic presidential nomination, but he is no longer a candidate. But he was, in many ways, poised to become a major player in any new Democratic administration, or at least a shaper in the Democratic Party coming over the next several years. And it looks like now that influence is rather severely discounted, given how he has fallen in terms of the public eye. Given the fact that he has confessed now to an ongoing affair beginning in 2006, although the ongoing part, no one's really sure that that adds up, his public explanation and what the media have pulled together. But that he had this affair while his wife was in remission from lung cancer. But there are big unanswered questions related to that. I don't intend to go into that. That's the territory I'm not interested in on this program. This is not a tabloid. I want to look at the theological and moral importance of all of this because of the backstory that has emerged from this, the wave of argument that has come in the aftermath of this that is represented, I think, more classically than I've seen it anywhere else by a piece at Psychology Today by Roy Baumeister in which he categorically says sex scandals should be considered politically insignificant. And I want to read to you directly from what he had to say so that you can just hear for yourself the strength and audacity of his argument. He says this, I can imagine people objecting that sexual decision-making reveals a man's character. Okay, I got to stop there for just a minute. When you start talking about adultery as sexual decision-making, you are already abstracting yourself from the reality here. But I'll continue. He goes on and says, I refer specifically to men here because so far only men have had their political careers ruined by sex scandals. This argument seems lame to me. A much better and more relevant test of character would involve how the person has managed his money. Has he always paid his bills on time? If the answer is no, that is much more reason to question his suitability for public office than an occasional bit of unsanctioned sex. Now, he gets down to the thesis of his argument, and he says that America is not so oversupplied with brilliant, wonderful, effective politicians that we can afford to disqualify a substantial number of them based on something as irrelevant as a bit of wild oats, end quote. So I'm going to ask you the question right now. Is an extended adulterous affair encased in lies and betrayal merely a bit of wild oats? I don't think so. Now, he also makes another argument that I'm going to read to you, so you're hearing it from his voice. He says this. He says that the public is drawn to support high testosterone men who are more likely to be leaders and are also equally more likely to seek multiple sex partners. Quote, high testosterone does not promote sexual fidelity. It makes men want to have more different partners. On top of the self-selection of adultery-prone men into politics, the opportunities probably increase for a successful politician. End quote. This is amazing. I never even heard anyone make this argument during the Bill Clinton scandals. But this is the summary of what he says. He says here, you want to look for people with high testosterone because men with high testosterone are the people most likely to be effective leaders. It just so happens that the same testosterone level is more likely to make them want different sex partners, multiple sex partners, and to commit adultery. So if you want a good, competent politician, you're going to have to put up with a sex scandal. And we just need to grow up and get over it. Now, I can come up with dozens of reasons why I think this argument is ludicrous, but I want to hear from you. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Matt, listening on WFIA. Go ahead, Matt.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well. What do you think of all this?
Well, I think it's I totally disagree with the author of that article. The trend over the last decade has been divorce rates continually climb and climb, and the family life and family structure is becoming less and less important. I think if you're going to take political office, especially in the Senate, the United States Senate, or in the office of presidency, that you hold yourself to a higher moral standard. And if you can't be honest to the person that's supposed to be your best friend, your wife or husband, then how can you handle tough issues when you're president or a senator and have to have a lot of conversations, you know, with each other and make wise choices? So in my mind, if he can fail on that end, then he needs to remove himself immediately from public life.
Yeah, I don't think that John Edwards is inclined to remove himself immediately from anything here. The evidence of that, I would suggest, Matt, is the statement that that he gave, and perhaps it'd be good to listen to this. This is his interview with Bob Woodruff on ABC's Nightline, in which he actually made the first public statements, at least from his voice, about this. And in that particular interview, his response to a question from Bob Woodruff is exactly getting at what you're talking about here. Let's listen.
You're running for president of the United States, but at that time you were living in a lie. You could have been the Democratic nominee. What were you thinking?
Well, what I was thinking was this was something that was personal to my own family. My family knew everything about it, everything. And on top of that, if you look back, Bob, I mean, I've seen people like, for example, John McCain talk about the mistakes that he's made in his past in respect to his first marriage and left it, I think, basically at that. I mean, I'm not the first person to do this, but I don't want to talk about that. That's about somebody else. This is about me. Let me say this, and I want to say it absolutely clearly. I was wrong, and I am responsible.
Well, those last words are pretty strong. They're just undercut by everything he said before, and I want to track that with you just for a moment. He said, he refers to John McCain, who is divorced from his first wife and married to a second wife after a period of years. In other words, that was sometime in the past, and I am by no means going to say that I consider anything like that to be morally insignificant either. You just have to put that within the total context of a candidate. I wish John McCain were married to his first wife, and we were talking about that in terms of his biography. But that, I would argue, is a different issue than a candidate who's involved in an affair as he is running for president. And so that little sleight of hand was pretty interesting. But the bigger sleight of hand to me is when he throws out another man's name. He's the one who came up with it. And then he says, but I don't want to talk about him, that's somebody else. Well, you're the one who brought him up. You know, it's a very interesting argument. This man, after all, was a trial lawyer. And he knows how to play to a jury. But it was an answer to Matt's point. I wanted to play that because if you listen to that kind of statement, it's clear he doesn't think he ought to be out of public office. He's making the argument that this shouldn't be a disqualifying thing. It's going to be very interesting to see how that comes about. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let me put forth an argument in direct response to what Mr. Baumeister wrote at Psychology Today about this. He says, more or less, that competence should be the concern rather than character when it comes to what he euphemistically calls sexual decision-making. Well, I'm going to argue that it is very incompetent. It is extremely incompetent to put your entire campaign at risk by committing an affair like this. And so, to me, that's just another reminder that you can't separate competence from character. If a leader undermines his work and betrays his followers, that's not competent leadership. I want to know what you think. Give me a call, 877-893-8255. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking about the moral importance of the character question in terms of public leadership. Is it really vitally important that we consider something like what John Edwards did in terms of a marital affair to be significant when it comes to political office and political leadership? Should this be considered a disqualification? There are people out there making the argument that it shouldn't. I mentioned the argument, Mr. Baumeister, to which I linked in my article published at albertmohler.com. There's another one here. This one is by Walter Shapiro at salon.com. Mr. Shapiro is a former supporter of John Edwards, rather well known in political circles, and he writes that he was naive in believing that he knew Edwards as well as he understood anyone in the political center ring. He says, yet I never saw the sex scandal coming, partly because I accepted the mythology that surrounded the Edwards' marriage, and partly because I assumed that any hint of a wandering eye would have come out during the 2004 campaign. He says, nonetheless, this new scandal has brought us all into the real world. Now, this is what's really, really interesting. This is how he ends the article. This is the turn I didn't expect, and I'm going to read it explicitly, directly from his words. This is what he says. He says, if we stopped expecting would-be presidents to be paragons of marital fidelity and shining examples of religious faith in the public sphere, we would not set ourselves up for the constant disappointment at human frailty, end quote. Okay, listen to that again. He says, if we stopped expecting would-be presidents to be paragons of marital fidelity, we wouldn't set ourselves up for constant disappointment. And let's think about that argument. You could expand that to say, if we stopped expecting them to be competent in foreign affairs, we wouldn't be disappointed. If we stopped expecting them to be adequate in giving presidential leadership in the economy, we wouldn't be disappointed. If we just gave up on these unrealistic expectations that they would tell the truth, well, we'd never be disappointed when we find out that they lie. You know, I just can't imagine a worse argument than let's lower our expectations so that we can't be disappointed. I don't think that's an argument that even Mr. Shapiro can live with for long. Not unless you're just going to say the moral issues don't count and everything else does. But that's a hard argument to make with a straight face. Then again, that's pretty much the argument Mr. Baumeister made. I wonder what you think of this. Give me a call at 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Tom. What are you thinking, Tom?
Hey, Dr. Mohler, thanks for having me on your show. As you're reading those quotations, I was caught between laughing uncontrollably by statements made by allegedly well-educated men or crying because of the destructive nature of adultery. My comment is this: if a person, whether it's a husband or wife, engages in adultery and is therefore a violation, it's a violation of integrity of the most intimate relationship created by God, how then are they to maintain integrity in any matters of life beyond that marriage, with any relationships with anyone, be they a leader in public office or a leader in industry or anywhere else in their life?
I think it's a very good and substantial argument. I think that's the central argument here, Tom. I think you're exactly right. I want to take us to January 20, 2009. Fast forward in your minds to January the 20th of 2009. On that date, unless something very unexpected happens, either Senator John McCain or Senator Barack Obama will be raising his right hand and saying these words: I do solemnly swear that I will faithfully execute the office of President of the United States and will do the best of my ability preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. That is formally known as the oath or affirmation of office of the President of the United States. That is an oath. It is a public pledge. It is a covenant made between the president and the people. Why would we expect that a man who breaks the public oath of fidelity to his wife would keep an oath made in fidelity to the Constitution? I mean, if anything, the fidelity to the Constitution appears to me to be a much less significant matter than fidelity to a wife. When it comes to looking at the oath that is here made, I think Tom's point is exactly right. And I think that's why we know intuitively that character is essentially tied to leadership. There's just no way around it. We know that there is absolutely no way to say that what happens in terms of the sex life is separated from the larger issue of character and of public leadership. You know, the Bible rejects any kind of Gnosticism, and that's an ancient heresy that separates, tries to separate the soul or the mind from the body, so that what happens in the body is not supposed to have anything to do with the soul. The Bible clearly rejects that, even speaks of sexual morality as unique, because that is sin against a man or a woman's own body, making it even more significant. We'll be right back.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. We are discussing personal morality and public leadership, and over against the arguments made by many now that we just need to lower our expectations and give up on the fact that we should consider our leaders responsible for maintaining their marital vows. The argument is even taken further by Roy Baumeister in Psychology Today, arguing that if we want high testosterone leaders who are going to be competent in office, we can't afford to be wasting them by disqualifying them because their high testosterone levels lead them into extramarital affairs. I think my one-word summary of that argument is reprehensible. But I also think my one-word summary of its impact is spreading. I think there are people who would think, yep, okay, that makes sense. Doesn't make sense to me. I want to know if it makes sense to you. The number is 877-893-8255. By the way, when I say it doesn't make sense to me, it doesn't make sense to the vast majority of Americans. And I want to say furthermore, it hasn't made sense to the vast majority of people involved in politics who have spoken to this. I have not heard any political leader say this is unimportant. You will hear people say, I don't want to make any comment about that. That's a personal situation. Basically, you had both of the presidential presumptive nominees speak that way. But I don't think anyone's going to get up as a political leader and say, I think this is just unimportant. I don't think character matters. It's because the American people have at least the persistence of a moral intuition that it matters. And I'm thankful at least for the persistence of that intuition. Let's go to Nancy. What do you think of all this, Nancy?
Well, Dr. Mohler, thank you for having me on the program. My comment is, let's ask Mr. Baumeister how his wife would respond. And let's wonder if he was willing to ask Mr. Edwards' wife while she was lying in, you know, a hospital bed trying to recover from her bout with cancer, how much testosterone affected her situation, and would either of those wives be willing to say, oh, it's all right if my husband's play around?
Yeah, you know, Nancy, I think that's a very good point. And that's a point that, by the way, has even more traction and credibility made by a woman rather than a man in this particular point of argument. You speaking on behalf of the wife here is something that needs to be added to this equation. And I think the truthfulness of your statement is pretty much just on its face. You know, one of the saddest things about so many of these sex scandals is that the men who are involved in them seem to be coercing, and I don't mean that in terms of physical, but morally using persuasion or whatever, for clearly political reasons, they persuade their wives to show up with them for their confessional press conference. It was true for Elliot Spitzer. It was true for Jim McGreevy, the governor of New Jersey, even as he was coming out of the closet. Which would seem to just add even more humiliation to his wife who was there. That seems to be the way it was. I noticed that John Edwards did not do that. It's interesting. Some of the press congratulated him for not doing that. But you just have to know, and I can't read the man's heart. I can, I think, understand something of the political calculation. To have a woman who is known to be fighting for her life against cancer there in the same camera frame as her husband admitting having an affair, I think that's even more disastrous than the risk John Edwards took in that interview. I think that would have been catastrophic, because I think Nancy's point would have been made even without words, just looking at this woman. You know, and in terms of moral evasions, John Edwards has insisted that this affair took place, or at least began, according to the accusations of others, when his wife was in remission from cancer. You know, I guess that's supposed to mean it's less morally significant. I just don't think Americans are going to buy that argument. And I think Nancy's exactly right. I don't think wives are going to buy that argument, nor should they. The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Claire, calling from Columbus, Indiana. Go ahead, Claire.
Hi, Dr. Mullen. Thanks for taking my call. Earlier caller sort of took my main point that integrity and trustworthiness are a couple of the main things that we need from a leader, and we don't have that if we've got one, you know, breaking his marriage vows, as you well said. But secondly, I was going to suggest, too, that even if we buy the secular argument that sexual dalliance doesn't matter, there's a judgment issue that's involved as well, and we learn something about a man's character and his ability to make judgments when he does something like this, and that's also critically important.
Claire, I think both of your points are exactly right, and I want to add a third one, which goes back to the issue of risk-taking. And, you know, the fact you mentioned judgment, I think is exactly true. We're seeing that this is a man who is willing to do what he knows is wrong and what he knows is disastrous for himself, for his marriage, and for his campaign, if ever it were to be released and known to the public, as these things almost always are. But then it comes back to the fact that he is willing to put all that at risk. You know, he had all of this riding on his potential as a presidential candidate, and he put all of that at risk. And one of the interesting subplots to this story is the fact that this was known during the campaign. It was just not substantiated yet by mainstream media. And there's no reason why John Edwards should have had any confidence that this would not come out, even as he was running for president. That's a huge risk. And a lot of people, just given Claire's point, and also the point earlier made by Nancy, a lot of people are going to wonder, you know, Elizabeth supposedly knew about this and the campaign side by side with him and all the rest. You know, what does all this mean? That's where I'm going to suggest that it's impossible to get into a moral interrogation of the spouse in this situation. I think it's just impossible. That spouse has been put in an incredibly awkward and impossible situation, and I want to put the moral scrutiny back on the candidate who, or the political leader who would do this rather than on the spouse. There's still time for you to call and tell me what you think about all this. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. I want to go back to the one word that is offered by many in this situation as the reason why we should get over sexual morality as a concern. I want to go back to the argument of Roy Baumeister made in Psychology Today when he says, look, we don't have a surplus of competent candidates. Let me use the words that he uses here. He says, brilliant, wonderful, effective politicians. He said, we don't have enough of them that we can afford to disqualify a substantial number of them based on something as irrelevant as a bit of wild oats. I want to use the three adjectives, draw attention to the three adjectives he used there. Brilliant, wonderful, effective. I got to say, I don't think it's too brilliant. It's fundamentally unwonderful, and it's extremely ineffective to end your political career putting everything at risk like this and committing adultery against your wife. I think this is one of those arguments we needed to take apart word by word. And we'll be right back. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. One last call comes from Ash. Ash, what do you think about all this?
I've got to tell you, Dr. Mueller, I tend to agree with you. I think what he did was, I'm an atheist, by the way, and I agree with you. I think that what he did was foolish. I think that it endangers national security, and it pulls the president, possible president, up to blackmail. So I think there's some very practical reasons that what he did was ridiculous. I'm kind of disturbed that the book's being touted with the topic because I think there's a ton of who think that he was absolutely ridiculous.
Ash, I really appreciate your call, especially your succinct argument made here at the end of the show. And I want to tell you, when you start thinking about this issue, the worldview always comes into view here. And I appreciate your candor in saying you're an atheist. You agree with his argument. And that gets back to one of the reasons why I wrote my argument. And that is that I think the vast majority of Americans agree with Ash and agree with the callers on this program that moral character is significant for public office and sexual morality is revealing of personal character. But I'm going to argue that the reason why there is that rather settled conviction and moral impulse or instinct of the American people is that it is a residue of the Imago Dei. I'm going to argue that it is indeed a reminder that our Creator made us as moral beings, and the reality is that being moral beings, there are certain intuitions and instincts in us that come out even when we are unable to offer an argument. And the vast majority of Americans may not have much of an argument to offer here, but they know what's right and they know what's wrong. Philosopher Leon Cass of the University of Chicago, and you've heard me mention this before, refers to this moral instinct as the yuck factor. He says there are just certain things that all people in all societies, virtually everywhere, in all times, recognize as morally repulsive. Yes, let's go ahead and use the word wrong. And whether it's the incest taboo that anthropologists talk about, or whether it's something like adultery, or even something like the argument for lowering our expectations so that adultery doesn't matter anymore, there's a basic moral intuition that says that's just wrong. I think there's a basic moral impulse that says that won't work. I think there's a basic moral understanding that we would not willingly choose leaders who would break their word and violate their vows. I think it also turns on the head. Whether people would actually make this argument or just operate on this presumption, I think it certainly makes the argument that most people think that fidelity to the marital vow is actually more important even than the oath of office. It's a more fundamental, a more basic, and a more enduringly moral commitment. If you'll break that one, why should we believe you would accept and keep and be faithful to any other? Back tomorrow to talk about the movie American Teen and what it says about American adolescence on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.